Okay, so I'm going to start with acknowledgments. This is joint work with Simon Morgan and Wu Tao Yin. We're both here. And I've had good conversations with Bill Allard and Bob Hard. Bill is here. And I've benefited from the work that I was doing in parallel with Sulam Mezidolu on the L1TV Functional. And this is inspired by work that, that I heard about in Minnesota that was started with Joanne Glowens' dissertation thesis and continued with Sarang and Mark. Sarang's here right there. All right. Oops. Okay, so when you start talking about shapes, there's always the question of how you're going to represent the shape. And usually you think about some subset of a Euclidean space. And then there's the question of what mathematical structure do you want to put on those subsets. So for this talk, we're going to think about shapes as currents. So what are currents? So currents are, way to think about that is N forms can be integrated against oriented manifolds, okay? And so N manifolds are therefore dual to N forms, but they're not the whole story. There's a lot more in the dual space to N forms. That dual space is the space of currents, right? And we'll need to know what rectifiable sets are. Well, rectifiable sets are sort of very general sets can be described as countable unions of C1 N submanifolds plus some negligible set. And we want these sets, rectifiable sets, to have orientations. So an orientation is N vector. This is not. Let me hit the power. Sound like the low power D, but I don't want to take the, the risk. Okay, so to orient it, we need n vectors. So in two dimensions, you have a wedge of two vectors. You can think of it as an oriented n plane. Okay? I'll just have to use this. Okay. So how do we represent currents? Well, we're going to think about what a current T does to a typical N form, phi. So if T is an N current, and phi is an N form, and we have an orienting N vector, and theta is the real or integral density, so that's going to be, you think of a measure of the weight, okay? Then T acting on phi is just the integral of phi against the orienting N vector, weighted by the weight, and integrated against the n-dimensional Hausdorff measure restricted to the rectifiable set. Okay? So boundaries, how do we get boundaries? Well, you can be inspired by Stokes' theorem. We know that in Stokes' theorem, the Apeirona manifold integrating n-dimensional manifold, integrating an n minus one dimensional form along the boundary of the manifold, the same as integrating the exterior derivative of that form in the interior of the manifold. So we use that to define boundaries. The boundary of T is defined to be T acting on the exterior derivative of the form. Okay. All right. Now some pictures. So here's a manifold with boundary. So we have this orientation, just think of the right-hand rule, 1, 2. that orients the boundary naturally. That's a nice rectifiable two current. Okay. Some other nice currents. Here's a nice one current. So we have these various curves that are all oriented. Density is one. It's finite. You could have a countable collection of such things. It would be a current, nice one current. Here we have something that doesn't have integral density. So I'm forming a current by taking the union of these vertical segments with usual orientation pointing up. And I'm taking segments which have an x-coordinate which is rational. Okay? So I have a countable number of those. So I just produce a list of them, enumerate them, and then assign weights like this. The ith guy has a weight 2 to the minus I. Right? That's going to be a nice one current carried by that set of segments, and it will have, obviously, non-integral density. Turns out, what's really nice about it is you pick any point on one of these segments, you zoom in enough, everything else sort of disappears and it looks like one manifold. Just, you know, you have to think about it a little bit because rational points are dense there. All right. Okay, now let's go to L1TV. What is it? Well, it's ROF, which has a 2 here without the 2. So L1TV or TVL1. And I put a little lambda here to indicate the connection to the parameter lambda. Chan and Azadulu showed that if my input D, so this is the in image processing, this would be the noisy image, this would be the possible denoised image. Okay. So if my input is a characteristic function of a set omega, then for some sigma, my output I can get an output such that it's the characteristic function of a set. There can be minimizers that aren't characteristic functions, but there's always one that is. Right. More precisely, well, I don't worry about more precisely what I said is correct. Okay. So specializing L1TV to sets, we can write the functional on the characteristic function is just the perimeter of my possible minimizer plus lambda times the area of the symmetric difference between the possible minimizer and the input function. So how do we see this? Well, we have a characteristic function, then the gradient will be concentrated along the boundary. And if you look at this little picture, this is supposed to represent something that's almost a characteristic function. Okay, so it's 0 out here, then goes up steeply, and then goes to 1. So if we computed the gradient of this, and we integrate in this direction, we get 1. And then to get the rest of the direction, this is sort of Fubini-like, we'll end up getting the length of the curve times 1, so we get the perimeter. Okay. So what is this? Well, if these are characteristic functions, then this is simply just the integral of the difference between characteristic functions, which is the area of the symmetric difference, times lambda. I have a picture right there. So suppose omega is really wild. Okay, well, the total variation really only measures what you can see measured theoretically. Right? So all these little tendrils get ignored. It's called a reduced boundary, and the reduced boundary is essentially equivalent, not precisely equivalent, but essentially equivalent to the measured theoretic boundary. So let's see, to remind you what the measured theoretic boundary is if I take a point and then zoom in on it, if the, and then look at the densities, that the limb sups and limb imps are bounded away from 0 and 1, then I'm at a boundary point. And if I'm inside, we know that the typical point inside, when I look at densities, it goes to 1. Outside, it goes to 0. Okay. Reduced boundary, the thing that the total variation measures, is actually one that has half. Okay, so what happens when we stick in an omega to the L1TV? Well, here's what a solution looks like. So if we stick in omega, which is blue, actually, everything filled in, so I'm showing the boundary of omega there, then the solution, the sigma, will have this boundary. And the red will show the symmetric difference between the two sets. So here, there's more, here there's less. So if I took the difference of the characteristic functions, I would have, depending upon the order, I'd have opposite signs. Okay, so what's the flat norm? Well, the flat norm can be defined in a couple of equivalent ways, and they're equivalent by theorem. One is, if I take the supremum over all forms which have bounded the supposed to be absolute value, and my absolute value phi is less than 1, or Euclidean size, and Euclidean size of d phi is less than 1, t of phi, then that's a flat norm. Okay, so what is another way of looking at it is this. Suppose I think of t and I try to decompose it. I decompose it into, go back to this picture. So suppose this is T, the blue. And I can decompose it into this thing plus the boundary of that. Does that make sense, everybody? If I take the boundary of this and I have the orientations right, when I add the boundary of this to that, I get the blue. Okay. So the flat norm is the decomposition such that when I add the area of this plus the length of that, and the sum of those two is this blue thing, that sum is least. And what I've drawn there actually is the exact answer when the radius, when lambda equals 1 over this radius right there. All right. So here's another picture. If I have this current T, which has its orientation, then essentially what I'm doing is I'm able to trade. I have these two pieces. Notice they have opposite orientations. I can have this area and get rid of that length. So I'm going to be charged for that area, and I'll get rid of that length by subtracting this boundary there. So I subtract all that and add only those two little pieces. And so the optimal way of doing that will sort of tell me what parts of this look big according to, compared to one, and what parts look small. So what I can do, so in a second we'll add a lambda here. So that'll let us adjust what's big and small. This is the classic flat norm. So here's the result. If I set lambda equal to 1, and I stick in omega into the L1TV, the minimizer, the F1 evaluated at the minimizer will be the flat norm of the input, of the boundary of the input. All right. So that immediately suggests, how about if I let lambda not necessarily be 1? Well, so it's easy generalization. You can just define the flat norm with the scale lambda. Put the lambda in front of the mass term, mass of S. And we get the generalized result. Okay, so let's look, just to understand that, let's look at this. So we have a set omega, and we stick in its boundary and compute the flat norm of that, or we stick in omega into the L1TV. So if we stick omega in, we end up with this functional. Right? This is the perimeter of the minimizer plus the area of the symmetric difference times lambda. Well,
and you want a subscript on the F.
Yeah, sorry. Supposed to be a lambda there.
A lambda.
Yeah, because we moved the lambda, right? Okay. So, but what is this? Well, this is just the mass of the current that's supported on that symmetric difference. And this is just the mass of the boundary of sigma. So that is the flat norm of boundary of omega. So the only observation you have to, something you have to sort of check is that this really does equal that. So this equals that. And you can do that by assigning the right orientations in these red areas, plus and minus. So let's look at that. So if we start with this blue, and we start with the blue, and then we subtract this boundary. What happens? Well, so the boundary right now is this blue plus that. This reverses, and these arrows all reverse, and so the blue cancels, and I get the green. That's the key. That's really all there is to that. All right. So what does this get us? What are the, why is this a good thing? Well, immediately we get a computational path for computing the flat norm, because we have algorithms to compute L1TV on sets. And not only do we get the flat norm, but we get the flat norm decomposition. Okay? This allows us to generalize L1TV to things that are not boundaries and things that have higher codimension. Because L1TV only operates on things that are boundaries and have codimension 1. Okay? But immediately, if they're equal in the case of codimension 1 boundary, then you can define the flat norm to be the to be L1TV for those non-boundaries and higher codimension things. We have a new nonlinear multi-scale decomposition for general shapes and a practical distance in shape space. So actually, I think Sarang's going to be talking about this on Friday. Is it Friday or Thursday?
Friday,
yeah. All right. Okay, so if my input region is the stuff between the blue and the green, then its boundary is T1 minus T2, and I can immediately stick it in at L1TV, I'll end up with this decomposition. So what will pop out will be these two regions filled in. That will be sigma. And this is the symmetric difference, S. And the L1TV computes both the value, so the sum of the area of the red, plus the length of these two loops, and gives you the two loops and the red areas. And the other key thing is that as I change lambda, I'll get different results. So I can get this sense for what's going on at different scales. Okay, so there's a detail here. So look at this T1 and T2. If I look for the region that this is the boundary of, there is no set that it's a boundary of. It's the boundary of something that has, so in one place it has positive, in the other place it has negative. Let's see, maybe if I use the right-hand rule, this will have positive orientation, that will have negative orientation. So I would really need then to use L1TV on functions that have values plus 1 and minus 1. Or another solution is I can simply say if I have two such currents I want to subtract, their boundaries are codimension 1, then I can look at the sets these guys are originally boundaries of, and subtract and get a symmetric difference and look at the boundary of that. And that'll be a nice boundary of a set, and I can use L1TV on that. Or you can simply just use the direct methods that I'll show you preliminary results from on those two currents without worrying about L1TV. Oops. Higher codimension, curves in R3, smoothing, denoising becomes, so notice this both has boundary and it's higher codimension.
How do you implement that?
That is just what we're working on. It's not easy. Yeah. The fact that the scale, different scales give you different results. Here's pretty close to, I mean, I did this by hand, but I know what the exact solutions look like, so this is very close to what they would be. And you can look, well, so this is first suggested in for L1TV in a paper by Tony and Salem, and then you can look at, Luminita has done lots of multi-scale stuff with TV-based things, and look at actually the CAM preprint repository is a nice place to start for that. All right. So another thing that I find attractive about this is that you immediately can start thinking about problems, statistics of shapes, and one example is that you can one way of defining a scale-dependent mean is simply to define that to be the argmin of this sum, where I've said I have a bunch of data points, and each point's a current ti, and I want to find the current such that the sum of the distances between each point and my prospective mean, that sum is minimized. And there are a lot of other things you could do, but this is an example of something you could do. Okay. So here are some numerical examples. This is very, very preliminary work. This is Wotow did this, and we're in the process of really cranking this work up now. So our input is this oriented square, and if you choose lambda, let's see, if you choose lambda small enough, then you end up filling this in, which says so this is S, and that says the solution is the empty set. So we're getting rid of everything. Right? The boundary of this thing just kills the whole thing. Okay? If we use a bigger lambda, so in this case, it would be, I don't know, whatever that is, maybe 10 pixels or something. So it's 1/2, how does this go? The radius is 1/2 lambda, so it could be by 0.1 or something. Then you end up with this being S, and that would say that the solution is the square with the corners rounded off. Okay, so here's something that L1TV won't handle. It has a gap here. That's not the boundary of anything. Again, if you stick in a smaller lambda, get a bigger radius, then you end up wanting to replace this whole thing with a little arc. Okay. For bigger lambda, then you end up with the same thing before. We end up with just these corners rounded off and those guys just left alone. That's one potential drawback, in that the boundaries of the minimizers and the boundaries of the thing we started out with are the same. Yes? Sure.
The data.
The data is is this current, this oriented current. Just this one-dimensional current. It's the current. It's the one-dimensional current. It's just that curve with an orientation. This is not. This I should mention that. What so the way this is being done. is a direct...
You're computing the flat norm.
Computing the flat norm using the dual formulation.
Oh, okay.
And it's second order comb programming for that. I don't know where it's going to tell, right? Second order comb programming for this. So this is a direct method. This is not L1TV. Because we're interested in the generalization of L1TV.
So now say again what the answer is.
The answer is this curve right there. That's the answer.
So there's two things.
So the answer, so T minus boundary of S is this little guy. So that'd be the denoised, that thing. And S is that white.
Oh, the white, okay, okay.
Okay.
And
so this is turning, see, this is turning too fast for this big radius. So essentially, so a bit of intuition for L1TV and for the flat norm. Essentially what you're doing is you're looking for approximations whose curvature does not exceed lambda.
And if you replace TV by something like UX plus UI absolute value, that curvature would be the Wolf curvature, square
yes.
curvature.
Yeah,
but you haven't done that, but
I haven't done that, but yeah, in fact, Bill and I were talking about that today.
Yeah.
All right. So here's an example where we have two rectangles with, so one's oriented one way, one oriented the other. And so if I compute with a, again, with a, for a big radius, which is a small lambda, I end up filling in this, getting rid of this whole thing, and these guys have opposite, like plus one and minus one, okay? I use much bigger lambdas. In fact, I think I looked at this and it was about a radius of about 3 pixels. I end up, this doesn't quite, maybe it needed to run a little longer. It's trying to fill in the corners, just the corners of those guys, right?
So
you can see that.
So
what?
So you're computing a flat norm again.
Flat norm again.
What's T?
T is this, you know, one oriented one, one or that thing.
So it's rectangles opposite the oriented?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, so it's the boundary of...
Yeah, plus, minus, plus, minus.
Four outer rectangles.
Plus, minus, plus, minus. Okay. These are the S's. And so this one for a big lambda, I'm just rounding off the corners. For this one, I'm just getting rid of the whole thing.
So surely the solution, well, we know the solution is going to be non-unique.
So somehow
his second order comb program does the selection.
For this one, it's not non-unique.
Okay.
Because they have opposite orientations.
Okay.
To get the kind of ambiguity that we know about, it needs to have the same orientation. So the checkerboard has that same orientation.
What happens when you do it on the non-unique ones?
I haven't tried that yet.
This problem has a unique solution.
Yeah,
right.
What if you try it on one that's not unique?
We haven't tried it. I don't... I just haven't tried it. I mean,
okay.
This is very preliminary. So
all you gotta do is press the button, right?
Yeah, that's true. We haven't pressed the button on that one.
Well, you gotta press a couple of buttons. You gotta input them.
Yeah, I mean, so this is, you know, for me, since the orientation is important, it's a little more work than, you know, 10 seconds. So, okay. So what are the next steps? In the paper with Simon. That started this work. What we're doing, there's a little bit of sleight of hand here, because what we really want when we do this minimization, we want to put in a current and get out a current in the right form. We want an integral current out to put an integral current in. If we use scriptf, which is the thing that does that, we don't know yet how that relates to blackboard boldf. This is the one that's equivalent to the dual, guys. This one is equivalent in codimension 1 and dimension 1, but don't know about other dimensions. There's conjectures there, and it's not going to be trivial to settle that. It seems quite reasonable. We're working on that. So that's a piece of the work to really justify using dual the dual approach to bid calculation. Of course, if you just do a direct minimization over surfaces, you don't have to worry about this. Okay. The numerical methods for higher codimension need to be implemented. Haven't done that. We're just, in fact, we have a lot of the key people here this week. We're going to start that work in earnest.
And we'll quite generalize LMP just for characteristic functions, just for the analog and characteristic functions.
Well, no, it will be generalized. So since the degrees and characteristic functions, and is defined for any current, then we're calling the flat norm the generalization of L1TV.
But L1TV does functions as well as characteristic functions.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so actually, it...
You can do one, you can do the other.
It turns out, I mean, the flat norm works for currents that have non-constant density. So it works. But we're looking at the sets.
He's done his algorithm for that case.
Yeah. But we're interested in shapes. So that's
so that you get the log and the number of levels or something?
I could make the statement more precise. The L1TV computes the flat norm for top dimensional currents with non-constant densities. So an image is a top dimensional current with a non-constant density. So they're the same thing in that case. Okay, and then we want to explore the multi-scale distances and decompositions. There's a lot of, we think there's a lot of potential there. And interested in working with Sarong and others on the statistics and shape spaces. That's sort of the motivation for this. Here are the references. This is, you can go to the archive and get that paper. This is Tony and Salim's original paper on the L1TV. This is sort of the first thing that looked in detail at the continuous. There was work on discrete L1TV by Alan and Ian and Nicolo and so on. And this is the work that we sort of were inspired, actually after hearing about it in Minnesota last year. And again, Sarong will talk about some of this stuff on Friday.